Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes on this 14th of January, 2012. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me at twitter.com/William Gerald. You can hit me up at facebook.com/Cyril Quinn. Or as always, find my blogs or any recent audio on my new website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. Divisional playoff weekend football in NFL is always exciting time if you're a sports fan, especially if you're a diehard NFL fan, which most of you are, because it is widely regarded as the best weekend in all of football. You have the divisional leaders coming into play now. You have basically the teams that have no chance to do anything in the playoffs out of the mix. You know, they're done. You can get lucky and enter a wild card, get a wild card, you know, with an 8-8 record, as we saw, you know, with an 8-8 record, 9-7, what have you. But now, you know, the big boys are here. And when I look at this particular group of teams, you know, I see, first of all, the quarterback is absolute quarterback royalty. You have four Super Bowl MVP players, and you have in Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Eli Manning, and also Drew Brees. And you have a couple guys. They all, it's funny with these eight particular quarterbacks, because to me, each group is almost like a system of, you have the elite. Okay, you have the elite. To immortal type quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, and Brees, Rodgers, and Brady. You have the very good to close to being elite in Eli Manning. You have the nobody loves us. We couldn't do it. Nobody believes in us. Look at us now group in Alex Smith and also Tim Tebow. And you have the Joe Flacco, who's by himself in the still something to prove group. TJ Yates is not even a starting quarterback, so I don't even, you know, he could throw 8 interceptions, it won't matter. So I don't even place him in a particular group. The guy's a rookie quarterback and has done a good job, you know, playing as well as he played and helping the Texans get to this point. But to me, it's all about the quarterbacks. In terms of this divisional round. And these guys, you know, a lot of pressure on, you know, there's a ton of pressure on Brady, despite the 3 Super Bowl wins, to get New England a long-awaited home playoff win again, another home playoff win. They haven't won a playoff game since 2008. You know, can Aaron Rodgers, you know, put himself in that Joe Montana, John Elway group, as far as back-to-back Super Bowl winner, along with also, you know, Terry Bradshaw, some of those guys. You know, can Drew Brees get number two? Remember, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, there are a ton of quarterbacks with one Super Bowl. Think about the list of quarterbacks with one Super Bowl. Yeah, Brad Johnson's on that list. Trent Dilfer's on that list. Mark Rippon is on that list. So you had a lot of quarterbacks with one Super Bowl. When you get that second one, that puts you in an elite company. That takes you to another level. And the second theme to me in this divisional weekend is, you know, and I posed a question out there a couple of days ago: great offense versus great defenses. To me, this weekend will shift the power completely over to the big-time offense, because I think that whoever wins the Super Bowl this year is going to be a offensive-minded team, whether it be the Packers, whether it be the Saints, whether it be New England. It's going to be a dominant offensive team, I feel. It's going to be your Super Bowl winner. There are a couple of people out there who think, you know, hey, I'll still take the great defense. We'll see. I mean, again, I don't think there are any great defenses. I think that you have some very good defenses. Baltimore has a very good defense. San Francisco has a very good defense. Houston has a very good defense. So those are, to me, are the two themes that I take coming into this divisional weekend. The quarterbacks and the shift from offense, great offense, to great defense. The shift in the NFL from you know, defense wins championships, offense sells tickets, to offense sells tickets and wins championships also. We have a busy show, to say the least. Mark Lucas will join us, WFAN's Mark Lucas will join us at around 11:30 to talk some Giants, Jets, also Yankees as they made some moves last night. A lot of football to do. We'll talk some NBA, of course. Penn State, Sagan got going again this week. We'll talk about that. So we'll bring back React Quotes. I know some of you might have been wondering, where has React Quotes been? Well, you know, took a little vacation, but we are absolutely bringing it back. So we'll do some React Quotes, have some fun with that. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. We'll be right back with the Saturday morning wake-up call.
Coming at you with music and fun. And if you're not careful, you may learn something before it's done.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Cyril Quinn, 7 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Cold out there. It is, I mean, this weather. I mean, you know, Thursday. Come home from work, long day at the office, to say the least. And I decided to get in a little exercise, do some jump roping on the outside tennis courts where in my apartment complex. 60 degrees, felt good. You know, I had a little sweatsuit on. Next morning, it was like 28. And I basically almost pulled out the North Face. I didn't, but I almost pulled out the North Face, but it was very cold outside now. So I think winter is going to have its say in the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to get some snow. We're going to get some snow. No question that we are going to get some snow. So, don't get too excited about this little brief period of mild weather that we've had in December. Been an unquestionably warm December. Probably one of the warmest Decembers that I can remember living on the East Coast, whether it be Jersey or now, you know, Metro D.C. So, you know, I hope you enjoyed this past week, but because it's not looking good as far as the some of this weather goes and how cold it is. But it's wintertime. It's supposed to be cold. Saturday morning headlines. The New York Yankees have acquired Michael Pineda. If I call him Pineda. Pineda from the Seattle Mariners. Also, Jose Campos. They trade Jesus Montero, who was one of their prize jewels as a catcher, and a guy who, you know, had some moments towards the end of the regular season. Now, I think the Yankees have two other quality catchers in their farm system. They are stacked with catchers, so we'll talk to Malusis about that. So that kind of made Montero expendable. Pineda, you know, was 9-10, 3.74 ERA. He pitched better than his record, considering how bad Seattle was. They also added Hiroki Kuroda, who was 13-16 with 3.0 3.07 ERA. Again, another guy who pitched better than his record, but was just on a terrible team. Now, before we give the American League East to the Yankees, and again, these were good moves. These were solid moves. I would be worrisome of these moves, though, considering that Brian Cashman hasn't had the greatest history of picking up pitchers not named CC Sabathia. You know, these guys kind of fit in the mold. Yes, Pineda is young. He's very young. But, you know, you wonder about guys being able to pitch in New York. You know, you think about Jeff Weaver's of the world, the Carl Urbanos of the world, some guys like that. Guys who came off big seasons, guys who had talent, but just didn't pan out in New York. And again, we'll get Melusis will certainly help us answer all these questions. But I wouldn't look at them. These are moves that the Yankees, you know, these are good moves. I think these are moves the Yankees had to make as far as, you know, trying to, you know, strengthen their pitching staff, because, you know, you can't trust Burnett. You know, AJ, you know, Phil Hughes, you know, the only guy you can completely trust is CC Sabathia. You know, Garcia and those guys, you know, they did well to come as far as they went last year. But, you know, you got two starting pitchers. I mean, both of these guys are legitimate starting pitchers. I don't know where they're going to fit in terms of rotation, but I would guess that they're both will be in the starting rotation come April when the season opens, when the regular season begins. St. Louis Rams are close to picking up Jeff Fisher. They're just in contract negotiations. Fisher has agreed to a verbal agreement, but has not signed a deal. So they're signing, you know, crunching some numbers, things of that nature. Listen, Jeff Fisher, first of all, you know, kudos to the Miami Dolphins for not giving in to Jeff Fisher's demands of hiring his own general manager. Who the hell is Jeff Fisher? From a standpoint of he's got that kind of cachet to where he thinks he can hire his own general manager. Jeff, you haven't won anything. Again, he's a very good coach, very good coach. But I must have missed something. Jeff Fisher win a Super Bowl or Super Bowls? Now, I told you on this program about a good maybe 3 or 4 months ago, maybe even longer, that I thought Fisher was overrated. It might have been last year. Sometime on this program, I said that I thought Fisher was just a bit overrated as a coach. I think he's very good, and that his record is not as good as it, you know, 6 playoff appearances in 15 years is not nothing that, you know, you start not nothing to where you can come in and start making demands on the structure of the organization. I mean, that got a coach fired this week. Okay, and we'll talk about that later on the program. Of course, a less accomplished coach than certainly Jeff Fisher is, but apparently, you know. You know, they had a deal in place in Miami, but Fisher wanted Jeff Ireland, the current, you know, Miami general manager, wanted him out and wanted to choose his own general manager. Miami said, are you kidding me? Please. Take a hike. It's not going to happen. And this is a better gig for Fisher anyway. You know, St. Louis, you have a quarterback. I think they're going to end up getting multiple draft picks because there are going to be some people trading up to get that number two pick. So they should have a good draft. Miami does not have a quarterback. They draft in the ninth position, so they're not going to get RG3 or forget about Andrew Luck. And you know, you have Matt Moore. So I mean, the Rams situation is just a better situation from the standpoint of just, you know, Sam Bradford. I mean, they have Sam Bradford for St. Louis, and again, St. Louis apparently is going to allow Fisher to make some personnel decisions, which to me, and trust me, as a Washington Redskins fan, I know it's always dicey. Always dicey when you talk about a coach having say in, you know, who the players are. So we'll see how it works out. Overall, I think Fisher will turn St. Louis around, have them in playoff contention. You know, he's a guy that will get you to the playoffs, but, you know, he's a good coach. He's not a great coach. He's a good coach. I think he gets a little too much credit. Bill Cowher also talked about, had an interview and says that he's turned down at least 3 coaching jobs. And the more and more you the more and more you think about it, and the more and more that the more you, these years go by, the more time that goes by, you know, I don't know if Cal will coach again. I think that, and again, you never say never with these coaches. Dick Vermeil, you know, Bill Parcells are the two prime examples. But, you know, here's a guy who, again, people forget, he coached in Pittsburgh for 15 years. That's a long time. That's a lot of hours away from your family. That, you know, coaching in the NFL is 24 hours, 365. There's no offseason for these guys. I mean, there's no, forget about the end season. The off season, maybe they get a couple weeks vacation here and there and what have you, but for the most part, you're dealing with personnel, you're dealing with the draft, the combines, you're dealing with business decisions in terms of the cap space. Even a coach doesn't deal with that, but a coach has to have, in terms of the just dealing with personnel stuff. Think about the cap situation, you know. But dealing with just personnel decisions on who's going to be on your team and who's not going to be on your team is a year-round process. You know, the NFL turnover in the league is on average 30 to 40% each roster turns over, even for the Super Bowl champion. So, you know, it's a lot of work, 18 to 20-hour days. These guys, this is their lives. This is what they do, you know. So, Cowher sounded like a guy who was happy with his current job at CBS. He was happy, you know, spending more time with his daughter. Remember, his wife just passed away. So, you know, I could see him not coming back. But, again, if the right child comes up, you know, Green Bay job opens, Bill Cowher will be back. And then, of course, that's not going to happen. But something like that would have to take place. You know, if Bill Belichick retires tomorrow, let's say, wouldn't be crazy. Belichick, you know, we'd be surprised. Would you be shocked? Bill's been coaching for a long time. You don't think Bill Cowher would take that job with Tom Brady in that organization? Of course he would. So you never know. 347-215-6180 is your call number. We're gonna get to some NBA here next on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
Is the center of the earth in the middle of the universe? Then why is his verse coming six times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much while I write him like such words. Amongst the beings controlled by the screen, what does it all mean? All this I'm seeing, human beings screaming vocal javelin, line of a local unraveling. My wandering got my wondering with crisis and all this crisis. People say never knew what nice is. Check the papers, well, I've been on ice. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers laced with fear everywhere. Two triple M, I feel good, it might sound a little something. But damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game? And like, behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game, we got game. They got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
18 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, we will be speaking to Mark Malusis, talk about, again, a lot of New York sports going on right now as far as with the Giants in the playoffs, what happened transpired with the Jets over the course of this week, which we'll certainly touch on as well over the course of the program, and also the New York Yankees, who made a couple of pitching moves to shore up their starting staff yesterday. So, lots to talk about on this busy day here, busy sports day here of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, 347-215-6180. The poll questions. We have two poll questions. One is, of course, NFL related. Which underdog has the best chance to win? Giants, 49ers, Texans, or Broncos? The other one is, who is the best four in the NBA? Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Dirk Nowitzki, or Paul Gasol? So those are your two poll questions of the morning. For my Blog Talk Radio audience, I am currently on the chat line, so certainly you can hit me up on the chat line and hit me up on the chat line with any questions or comments that you may have. Last night, and I caught the end of this game, Heat lost their third straight game on the road on the road. They had lost back-to-back overtime games prior to that to the Clippers, to Golden State, and the Clippers. The Golden State loss is mystifying, especially with no Stephon Curry. Clipper loss, understandable. Clippers are, you know, these are not your, you know, your father's Clippers here. Last night, you know, I guess you're going to blame, you know, high altitude. But, you know, Miami Heat, and again, the Heat are back as the story of the NBA. I mean, I know Kobe Bryant's been great and what have you. The Sixers have been a major surprise, but the Heat are back at the forefront of the NBA storylines. You know, they lose a game last night, and, you know, Dwayne Wade gets hurt. Not injured, but hurt. He's banged up with his ankle or whatever. With his ankle, you know, you have the Heat now on a 3-game losing streak, and then you have, more importantly, the Heat doing what they do, and that's running their mouths. Chris Bosh comes out and, you know, says one of the worst kept secrets in NBA history. And, you know, stating the obvious that he'd rather see Dwayne Wade taking shots late in the fourth quarter, crunch time, than LeBron James. And again, this was a team last year that made a habit, a constant habit of making just dumb statements, self-inflicting wounds, and just shooting themselves in the foot in terms of the media and in the press. And nothing has changed. I mean, if you're Chris Bosh, first of all, you know, why would you come out and kill and kick LeBron James? And LeBron James has been great this year. He's playing, you know, again, as usual, MVP-type level. Now, he has also been disappearing in some fourth quarters of some games, which, you know, is nothing new for him. But, again, I just don't get Miami. I figured that last year would have taught them a little humility, a little just, you know, a better understanding of just how to deal with things. And it's clear that despite the contract extension that Eric Spoelstra received in prior to the season, that he doesn't have any control of that team. From a basketball standpoint, you know, again, we mentioned it before, I would be concerned about them playing against a zone defense. And, you know, Dwayne Wade, he's had a couple of injuries now. He's missed a couple of games. That would concern me. You know, can he physically, especially in a season where, you know, you're going to have this condensed schedule, you know, how much gas is he going to have in the tank in order for them to win a championship? One of those three guys are off or not on their game. They cannot win a championship. That's evident. And you want to talk about the supporting cast, this supporting cast, that. They have to have all three of those guys clicking in order for them to win a championship. And forget about all this talk about 60 wins, 58-8, whatever, this gaudy record. See, that's why, you know, in sports, especially in the NBA, you got to kind of let things just settle in. You know, they got out to this hot 3-0 start, 4-0. Three, they were 5-0, and it was like, oh, they're just miles above everybody else. And, oh, you know, how many straight games can they win and so on and so on. Okay. Now they're on a 3-game losing streak. Okay. So, kind of, you know, take it easy when you at the beginning of a season, in any sport, in particular the NBA, even in a season where you have 16 less games than normal. Dirk Nowitzki last night netted his 23,000th point, easily the greatest European player of all time. In my opinion, one of the greatest probably 25 to 30 players of all time, considering how consistent he's been over the course of his career. So Dirk gotten off to a slow start. His stats don't look as great as they normally do, but that they will pick up. He's just too good. Dallas now 7-5, now 7-5, and, you know, kind of working their way into the season. Lakers win their fifth straight last night, beating an improved Cleveland team. Cleveland, you know, 5-6 on the season, but improving. Kyrie Irving's been great this year so far. Rookie of the Year, without question, has, I believe, four straight 20-point games. So he's been great. You know, what can you say that hasn't already been said about Kobe Bryant? Three straight 40-point games. He leads the league in scoring. You know, everybody knows about the wrist. There are some reports that the wrist is improving. So that's even worse news if you're trying to guard this guy. And, you know, it's ridiculous just how this guy keeps coming up with motivation. I mean, the worst thing that could have happened to any opponent of Kobe Bryant or any opponent of the Los Angeles Lakers is for ESPN to come out there and say that, you know, he's the seventh best player in the league, voted on by ESPN experts and panelists of that nature. I mean, he just finds ways to motivate himself, manufactures ways to motivate himself despite all the championships. And he wants number six. There's no good to Todd Jordan. There's no question. You won't ever say that to Todd Jordan, but he wants that. And he wants six, even he wants seven. But just when you think that, you know, his game is slipping or that this is going to be a year where he kind of goes, you know, maybe drops out of the top five, top 10 players, you know, we can argue again that he's still the best player. You know, even though I don't think he is, but it's just the fact that he's in the discussion as being one of the best players in the league in year number 16 at the age of 33 is just remarkable. So Lakers improved to 9-4 in the season. They're going to have a rough stretch of games coming up. You know, they have Clippers, they have Orlando, they have Miami, Dallas. So, you know, and they have, I believe, Oklahoma City on Martin Luther King Day. I believe they play Oklahoma City. So, Dallas. I think Dallas, they play Dallas on Martin Luther King Day. So they're going to have, you know, they're going to be tested in this next week or so. But, again, Bryant has been just spectacular over the course of the last couple of weeks. Dwight Howard made NBA history this past week. Howard attempted 39 free throws against the Golden State Warriors. Okay. But that, to me, that wasn't the story. The story was the fact that he missed 18 of them. He missed 18 free throws. How do you miss 18 free throws? I mean, even Shaq has to be laughing at that. 18 free throws? I mean, that is, you know, that's embarrassing. Excuse me. That's embarrassing to miss that many free throws in a single NBA game. He was 21 of 39 in a game where he had about 45 points and 20 rebounds. There have been some talks of him, you know, texting Kobe Bryant back and forth, in terms of, you know, the idea of thought of playing together. I still think Howard, even though Andrew Bynum has tailed off a little bit due to the fact that Kobe Bryant's been taking about 30 million shots a game with his hot streak. But I still think Bryant and Howard will eventually play together before the year is out. I think that deal is going to be made eventually. So, you know, we'll see what happens. We're going to see what happens with that. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, we're going to have NFL picks. We're going to talk some baseball. We're going to talk some baseball as well. React quotes. And Penn State, they just never learn. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We are joined now by the Moose, Mark Malusis. How you doing, buddy?
Sir, what's going on, man? How are you?
Nothing much, man. I'm trying to stay warm down here. This temperature has just dipped. I mean, just in 2 days.
Yeah, the temperature's, you know, it's January. It wasn't too bad, you know, for the last couple of weeks, but now at least there's no snow yet. So, I mean, cross the fingers, but it is cold out.
Yeah, cross the fingers and knock on wood with that, because I believe some snow is coming soon.
Mark, I agree with that.
Yeah, of course, people, this is Mark Malusis, who has joined us, become a regular now on our program, and we certainly appreciate him coming on to the program. Mark, before we get to the Giants and Jets, obviously the Yankees make some moves last night, picking up the two pitchers. What are your thoughts on these moves? And what made Jesus Montero expendable?
Well, I mean, listen, I look at Montero, and I think obviously he's got a big-time bat. You saw the power of the opposite field in the month that he got the test last year with the big club. I don't think there's a question that he's going to be able to hit. Now, you look at it, he's a man without a position. I don't think he's an everyday catcher. He can't play first base with the Yankees. And I think anytime you look at it, we all know this, pitching is an absolute key. And if you have to give up a Montero to get a guy in Pineda who's got a power arm, yes, he faded last year. I understand that. But still, he was an all-star for the Seattle Mariners in the first half. And a young guy who generates strikeouts, I think that's a deal that you have to make. And I look at Montero, I still think he's going to be a very good hitter on the major league level. But I think it's a matter of going out there and getting a quality arm, and that's exactly what Cashman did.
Oh, no question about it. I think it's a move that they needed to make. Their pitching staff, last year, of course, with Freddie Garcia, they got some good innings out of that. But, postseason, that kind of got exposed, with Garcia and what have you, and, A.J. Burnett. The thing that will make me nervous, though, as, somebody who watches the team, and if I were a Yankee fan, is we kind of seen this before with the Yankees getting these pitchers not named CeCe Sabathia, who we know is going to be a big star, was going to be a big-time pitcher for the Yankees. We kind of seen this before with, Jeff Weaver when he was in his prime, a lot of talent coming off a bad team, Carl Pavano coming off a great year, even A.J. Burnett, so a guy who had, we know what kind of arm he had. I know Pineda is young. He's very young. But our Yankee fan, would you be nervous by this move, considering the history of that Cashman's had with these second-tier pitchers, so to speak?
Well, he's not, listen, I mean, it's kind of like trading, Pineda's more proven than Montero on the major league level. He's not Roy Halladay. He's not Cliff Lee. He's not a certainty. Certainly you look at the fade last year, you look at the difference in numbers that he had out at Safeco Field as compared to on the road, and there was a difference in the numbers. But with that being said, I don't think this is just a Cashman move. I think it's Cashman and his staff looking at a guy that throws to the mid to upper 90s, who's got a fair amount of upside. You're going to have to give to get. They were looking for a starting pitcher. He's a guy that you'd rather take a risk on than overpaying for an Edwin Jackson. And you add him and Kuroda on the same Friday, now you have seven pitchers for five spots, and obviously six for four because Sabathia is definitely, locked in as your ace top of the rotation starter. So you have quality of starting pitching. It's something that if you need to add a bat at some point in time, you can make a trade and deal a guy. You can Freddie Garcia kind of be your swingman. But am I nervous because of a lot of Cashman swing and misses? Not necessarily, because I think this is a move that you have to make. You're not overpaying for a 35-year-old veteran. You're overpaying for a young power arm who showed you a ton of potential early on in his career. And for me, even if it turns out not to work, it's a deal that you had to make.
I love the Corolla move, by the way. I mean, 1 year, $10 million. I think that's going to turn out, when the season's done, to be a bargain. He pitched much better than what the record indicated. Terrible team. The 3.07 ERA, even though he had a losing record. So the Corolla move, to me, was perfect. I mean, to get that guy for nothing and have just for $10 million, that's the move that I love that they made as far as the pitchers goes. So, what are your thoughts about Kuroda and what he brings to the ball club?
Well, you look at the last year, you mentioned it, Cyril. He pitched with 3.06 ERA with the Dodgers. I think he was 12-16 on the season. He made a one-year financial investment, I believe it was $11 million, something of that nature. I think it's a good move by the Yankees. They had interest in Kuroda last year at the trade deadline. Rumored, nothing really ever materialized. We know what happened with the Yankees in the postseason, but for a one-year investment, I think it makes a lot of sense. I agree with you. I mean, I think, amazingly enough, you know, even though it's been a very, very quiet offseason for the Yankees, and we knew they had to add some starting pitching, you know, and they were able to resolve it here in early January. And now you feel a lot better about the Yankees moving forward than you would have with the staff that they had in Jesus Montero, now with a Pineda and a Carota in the mix. Montero now gone. You know, you have a young starter still who can, who's got a good bat, not as good as Montero's, but is a very good defensive catcher, and then Austin Romine down on the farm. You know, Russell Martin's still going to be your opening day catcher this year, but he is not the long-term solution by any means whatsoever. I think you feel a lot better about this Yankee staff and about this Yankee team come October than you have a week ago at this time.
No question about it. You can never have, we all, as we all know, and the Red Sox learned the hard way, you can never have enough pitching
when it comes to
baseball.
Yeah, I mean, that's you need quality arms and you need depth in the rotation because you never know when guys are going to get hurt.
I'm going to shift gears a bit, Mark, to the Giants here as we get ready for, you know, divisional playoff weekend. I think always the best weekend in pro football. Giants, Packers, been a lot of talk, of course, about 2008, what happened with that game, the Giants' magical run to the Super Bowl, beating the Patriots, the whole nine yards. Do you think, like, how do you compare this team and the run they're making to the 2007 run back then?
You know, I think it's different. You know, there's a lot of comparisons to that 07 team, and I understand that with the pass rush and the big playability in the offense. And, you know, there are some guys that are around on both teams, but, you know, the roster has been turned over a lot. Eli's a better quarterback now. But I look at it, I think it's a better Packer team than the one that they faced in the NFC Championship game to get themselves out to Glendale, Arizona. I think Rodgers is probably a better player at this point in time. I think he is than what Favre was at that stage of his career. And I look at it, number one, I mean, the pass rush is still makes the defense goes. I think the linebackers with Pierce were a little bit better. I think the offensive line in 07 was a little bit better. The Giants' ground attack was a little bit more, was much better than it has been this year, even though they ran the ball well last Sunday in their home victory against the Atlanta Falcons. I think it's a different team. Plus, I think when you look at the teams in front of them, say a New Orleans, should they win this afternoon, and a Green Bay on Sunday, I think they're a little tougher of a test than, say, the Bucks, Cowboys, and Packers were dating back during that playoff run. I'm not taking anything away from the 07 team. It's an all-time great run, but I think this team isn't nearly as good as the 07 squad, and I think you'll see a little bit of that on Sunday.
Mark, I completely agree. I think, frankly, there's been too much focus in on that 2007. First of all, the Packer roster is, you know, they only have eight starters, I believe, that are on the team now that were on 2007. You mentioned with the quarterbacks. And also, you know, from the standpoint of, let's take recent history into mind in terms of what happened the last time the Giants went through Lambeau Field last season, and also, you know, what transpired, you know, this year. So I think too much has been made of that, but, you know, it was going to get some comparisons with, you know, with the matchups and what have you. On the Giants been doing a lot of talking. Are they a little overconfident? I mean, this Packer team was 15-1. You know, they've been laying in the weeds, so to speak, into the season on a good note with that Detroit win and also with what they did to the Bears. I don't know if you want to be doing as much talking, you know, going to, you know, facing a team that, again, as good as this team was this year.
Yeah, listen, sir, I think they're a confident team. You know, I don't need to hear Pierre Paul saying we're going to win on Sunday like he did earlier on in the week. I agree. I think there are a lot of people that are buying into the Giants, and that's fine. And the Giant fans should be excited about the game on Sunday. But the fact is, this Packers team did go 15-1. It's not a matter of now the Giants are playing their best football. Green Bay showed it all season long. They have, for my money, the best quarterback in the National Football League behind center. They are at home. A it's not going to be snowing. I mean, you look at it, the Giants are going to have to do a lot of things really, really well on Sunday in order to pull out an upset victory in Green Bay. I mean, they're a 7.5-point underdog for a reason, and I agree with you. I mean, a lot of people are talking about 2007 and a great run, and the Giants are going to do it again. You know, those kind of runs don't happen all the time. And I think you look at it, what this Giants season turned out to be, where not a lot of people were expecting a ton of things, where they win the NFC East, they, you know, eliminated the Cowboys, they sent the Jets on their merry way, they had their first playoff victory at home, MetLife Stadium. I think at the end of the day, you're going to look at it and say, you know, it was a pretty good year. And I think you're going to have a lot of good feelings about that, just how special that 07 team was, because those kind of runs don't happen all the time.
I agree completely. Definitely. I mean, the Giants, if they don't win this game, which I don't expect them to do so, they would have had, again, a more than successful season. You mentioned the Jets, and the Jets just, you know, talk about the opposite end of the spectrum, Giants versus Jets. You know, the Sanchez stuff comes out, and, you know, it's a typical team that has very little character, and, you know, it's his fault. I don't know, you don't cover the team per se as a beat reporter, but is their perception, how real is that perception of Sanchez of being lazy, you know, cover a GQ, you know, how real is that as far as his work ethic is concerned?
Yeah, not very. I mean, everyone that I've talked to that is around the team on a regular basis, they don't get it. I mean, now you can get on Sanchez for maybe not assuming as big of a leadership role as one would have expected, certainly on the growth of him, but that he is a hard worker, that he does put the time and effort in, that he works his tail off. So the idea that he does not put the effort in and rest on his laurels and doesn't go out there and do the extra work, that's something I've not heard at all, Cyril.
And, you know, they're talking about this, you know, the Peyton Manning thing. You don't even know if Peyton Manning wants to play next year. I mean, Peyton Manning could retire tomorrow.
Well, right. Well, I mean, listen, I think he wants to play. It's a matter of whether or not his neck and he's going to be able to play.
Can he hold up? Right, exactly. That's
right. I mean, you could trade for him and he takes one hit and he could be done for the year. I mean, that's how serious that bone fusion surgery in his neck that he had. So, I mean, the idea that now Peyton Manning's going to want to come to New York, cold weather city. I mean, maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. I don't know. But is there risk involved in that? Absolutely. And they're going to have to pay a ton of money for the risk? No question about it. So, I mean, and, you know, I think he wants to play. It's a matter of whether or not physically he can.
And I'm going to end off on this because I know you got to run here. How about this situation with the Jet coaching staff? You know, you read about Brian Schottenheimer. You read that you read that they were going to bring him back, but then you read that, you know, there was like either find a job or you're out, he resigns. What do you think about that situation? How do you think it really went down as far as, you know, his exit strategy?
Yeah, I don't think they wanted him back. I mean, I don't think they wanted to bury Schottenheimer, but, you know, I think they needed a change in the direction of that offense. And, you know, I know he works hard. It just didn't work this year. 25th in the NFL total offense, too many passes, not running the football enough, the lack of development of the quarterback in Sanchez. But I think the Jets wanted to be respectful of Schottenheimer for the work that he's done and for their organization. They didn't want to embarrass him, but they didn't want him back. There were rumors about Sperano before Schottenheimer even had stepped down as offensive coordinator. So, and as soon as Schottenheimer was done, Sperano was in the next day it being announced or it being made official that he was the new offensive coordinator of the Jets. So they wanted him out. I think he probably figured it was time to go, and that's when they parted their ways.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just done my favor and just say, hey, you know, we're not retained. We're not, you know, you're fired. I mean, he wouldn't be the first coordinator in NFL history fired. I don't know why, you know, to go through this.
Right.
You know.
Well, the thing was is he had 2 years left on his contract. They didn't want to pay him. I mean, that's the key. They wanted him to get another job someplace else, and they didn't want to have to be locked into paying him.
Yeah, that money always plays a big factor. So give me your picks for the divisional playoffs. You like the Packers.
Yeah, I like the Packers. I think they win a close game. I mean, I would take the Giants with the points. I like Denver. I like New Orleans. I like Denver. No, I don't. I mean, I'm sorry. I like the Patriots minus the points. I like the Saints minus the points. I like the Ravens at home minus the points because they've been a different team on the at home as compared to on the road. And I would take the Giants plus the points because I think the Packers win the game, but I think it's going to be a close game.
Thank you, Mark. And next time we get you on, you got to talk about those Orangemen, number one in the country, looking good.
Definitely. National championship contender. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. No question. Oh, without question, they are. Mark, as always, thank you for coming on, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You got to enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the playoffs, sir. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Talk to you soon. That, of course, is Mark Malusis of WFAN, SNY, and made some great points about the Giants and, you know, their whole ordeal as far as 2007. It's not, and again, it's not 2007. You know, he's absolutely right. Different Giant team, that team, you know, different Giant team, different Packer team, point blank. Are the Giants capable of winning that game? Absolutely. But, you know, I got a feeling the Packers are waiting. They're waiting, without question, the Packers are absolutely waiting. Again, I'm a Yankee fan. I like the moves, but I'm a little bit leery of, you know, those guys being able to pitch in New York is always a factor. You know, Cashman's made some moves in the past of some of these pitchers that have not worked out. You know, and I mentioned the names, you know, Jeff Weaver, A.J. Burnett, Carl Favano. But they're moves that, you know, you had to make from the standpoint of, you know, you need starting pitching. They needed to bolster that pitching staff without question. And they have, you know, two catchers in the minor leagues who are considered to be top prospects. You have Russell Martin. So Jesus Montero was definitely expendable. And, I mean, listen, if he goes on and becomes Mike Piazza, who knows? But it is all about the pitching in baseball. I mean, we know that. You have to have a deep pitching staff. So, and he gave you some things on the Jets. Sanchez, you know, apparently does work hard. Problem with Sanchez is, I don't think Sanchez is a franchise caliber quarterback, but I also don't think he's this bad, to be honest with you. I also don't think he's this bad. I think Schottenheimer is just an awful, awful coordinator. Mark was very nice in talking about Schottenheimer, but I'll say it, he's terrible. I mean, you look at the Jet quarterbacks under Schottenheimer. You know, you look at the Jet quarterbacks, what they have done after they have left Schottenheimer. Brett Favre, after he left Schottenheimer, had basically a career year in Minnesota in 2009. And Chad Pennington won Comeback Player of the Year for the second time when he went to the Dolphins after he left Schottenheimer. So there you go. We're going to take a quick break here. When we return, we will have some React quotes of the week. Again, still NFL picks. We'll still talk some more baseball, Penn State situation, a lot to do on this special 90-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Yeah. That spot will never get old. Oh, Jim Moore. I wonder what Jim Moore is doing right now. The former New Orleans Saint Indianapolis head coach. 49 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on his latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. Remember, you got the two poll questions of the morning. Who is the best power forward in the world? The best power forward in the world? Kevin Love, Blake Griffin, Dirk Nowitzki, and Paul Gasol. I will answer that, you know, coming up in a couple of minutes. And also, which underdog has the best chance of winning? Broncos, 49ers, Giants, or the Texans? React quotes are back, and we're going to get right to it with the power forward question. I believe I'm the best forward in the league. That quote comes from, of course, Minnesota Timberwolves power forward Kevin Love, who mentioned that during an interview earlier this week. Kevin Love currently, right now, is averaging 24 points and 14 rebounders. He's without question the best rebounding power forward in the league, but best power forward in the league, I don't think so. Kevin Love is a very good player, all-star caliber player, but the bottom line is, you know, he's been around for basically a cup of coffee. I mean, team last season won 17 games, 17-65. Now, this year, they've elevated themselves to looking like an actual NBA team, okay, which is a far cry from what, you know, from where they were at last year. Rick Adelman is doing an excellent job. They're still under 500, but they are a much-improved team. But, you know, before I can call, you can call Kevin Love the best power forward in the league, can he get his team to the playoffs? Because it still comes down to wins and losses. I mean, I've seen many of guys put up big numbers on losing teams. To me, those guys lose points in my eyes as far as being considered truly great and elite players. You know, the bottom line is, you know, Kobe Bryant has been a great player, not just because of, you know, his numbers. He has 5 championships, and it's all about winning. And even Kevin Garnett, when Kevin Garnett was out there averaging, 23, 24 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. Teams would make it, you know, with basically nothing around him. His teams would at least make the playoffs. Now, you know, they had a string where they lost, you know, every year in the first round up until, you know, they finally breaking through in 2004, but they were at least playoff contenders. You know, that signified him as being a great player. So, you know, for my money right now, the best power forward in the league is still Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, again, on this year, he's struggling at the beginning of the season. He's only averaging 18 and about 6 rebounds, 5.5 rebounds. But those numbers will pick up. Dirk Nowitzki is a proven commodity. You know, he's going to give you 24 points, 8 or 9 rebounds. He's going to shoot 90 from the free throw line, going to shoot close to 40 from 3-point range. And, again, his teams always make the playoffs, and his teams are always in contention. And again, he won the championship last year. So he's still the best power forward in the league. And he's still he's still one of the toughest covers. From a pure matchup standpoint, Dirk Nowitzki is arguably still the toughest cover in the league. A 7-footer that can put the ball on the floor, can shoot from the outside. He's developed a decent post game on the inside. Again, Kevin Love is very good. But again, the best power forward in the league is a bit of a stretch. I would take it for my money. You know, I would take Blake Griffin over Kevin Love. If you ask me right now, if I would start a team between Blake Griffin and Kevin Love, I'm taking Blake Griffin every day of the week and twice on Sunday. I mean, Blake Griffin putting up 23-10, and has developed a 15-footer. Has developed, you know, is a underrated passer, and the athleticism is not even, you know, comparable. Again, I like it. Listen, I'm not here trying to bury Kevin Love. I think he's a very good player, but not the best power forward in the league. Next quote: he's lazy and content because he knows he's not going to be benched. An anonymous source stated this about New York Jet quarterback Mark Sanchez. I like what Nick Manigault said, the Jet center. Listen, if you're going to come out and criticize a guy, put your name on it. Okay. Put your name on it. You know, these anonymous sources and these, you know, officials say and things of that nature, you almost can't take them seriously. And, you know, the Jets need some character guys in that locker room. That locker room was absolutely poisoned over the course of the season. And the number, to me, one of the main reasons, amongst others, I don't think the team was as good as it has been in past years. But one of the major reasons why they didn't make the playoffs. Now let's just, you know, pile on, you know, let's just throw Sanchez, you know, under the bus. And, you know, he's the reason. You know, Sanchez still had, you know, he didn't have a, you know, he didn't play well, but he still had 26 touchdown passes. So, you know, he did some things right, but, you know, we know Sanchez is absolutely a work in progress. But, you know, to sit up here and question, you know, question his work ethic and just basically single-handedly blame him for the Jets season, it's a little bit much, especially coming from that locker room. I wouldn't take anything somebody said in that locker room seriously unless it was somebody like LaDainian Tomlinson or Nick Manigault. And Manigault came out and, you know, said, listen, the guy works hard. This is, you know, basically calling out any players who were announcing, who were making these comments without putting their name on a particular source. And, you know, I'm not a Sanchez fan by a long shot. But that organization, you know, Rex Ryan doesn't care about offense. You know, he pays too much attention to his defense. They had a bad offensive coordinator. They had basically no running game for the most part. You know, Mark Sanchez doesn't call his own plays. I mean, Mark Sanchez is not the one who said, listen, I'm going to throw 60 times in the game. I mean, I was Brian Schottenheimer. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind when thinking about Sanchez. I'm tired of people saying that I am power hungry, that I'm saying all the wrong things. I've never said I want to be the GM. That comes from former interim Oakland Raider coach Hugh Jackson, of course, who was fired this week by new GM Reggie McKenzie. And there are two big reasons why Hugh Jackson was fired. Number one is the obvious. New GM, want to bring in my own guy. And that's what Reggie McKenzie said on various interviews. But number two was the sense of just absolute entitlement that Hugh Jackson thought he had. Remember, Hugh Jackson was brought in as an interim coach. Was hired after, you know, the firing of Tom Cable last year. Okay, so the Raiders were not thinking about Hugh Jackson being, you know, a long-term coach. He was brought in by Al Davis last year. They were going to see, you know, how the team played this year and then go from there. But with Hugh Jackson, if you listen to that press conference to end the season where Hugh Jackson just comes out, and you would have thought Hugh Jackson was the general manager. It was Mike Shanahan. I mean, he was talking like he was just calling all the shots. He's gonna, he was angry at the team. He's gonna look to revamp this and that. I'm like, do you have that much power? And there was some talks that he wanted in on who was gonna be the new general manager. There was any things of that nature. Like, dude, you are still basically on probation. I was just shocked by the press conference he said he had. At the end of the season, it turns out that was part of the reason why he got fired. Now, maybe he gets fired anyway because, again, Reggie McKenzie said, hey, I want to bring in my own guy, and again, it makes perfect sense. If you're a Raider fan, you better have that than have a friction between the general manager and the coach, because what happens is coach can go 14-2 and still get fired because the general manager hates him. As was the case in San Diego back in 2006 when Marty Schottenheimer went 14-2 and A.J. Smith fired him because he lost to, you know, only the New England Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. I mean, what a terrible loss. And they should have beat him, but come on. Like, you can't fire a guy off a 14-2 season. It was ridiculous. So, listen, know your place, and, you know, sometimes keeping it real goes, like Jay Chappelle said, sometimes keeping it real goes wrong, and Hugh Jackson definitely was too real and too direct in that particular press conference. Should have kind of toned it down a bit, or maybe he might still have a job. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. When we return, We'll talk about the Penn State saga that is, certainly is ongoing. And we also certainly will have NFL picks as well. Still a lot to do on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, and I'm your host, Will Quinn, taking you for a special 90-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, you had the playoffs, divisional NFL divisional weekend, 49 Saints at 4:30. We have 4:30 on Fox. You have the primetime game tonight, Patriots and Denver, which I think will do a number. I think we'll do a, it's going to do a big-time number. Last week, the Bronco Steeler game was the highest rated program since the Super Bowl. I think that Bronco Patriot game will even surpass that. So it'll be very interesting to watch the ratings when the ratings come back on Monday about that game. Tomorrow, Houston and Baltimore will kick off the day at 1 o'clock CBS, and then the weekend will culminate. With the Giants traveling down to Lambeau Field to take on the defending Super Bowl champion Packers. Of course, we'll have NFL picks coming up a little bit later in the program. But right now, this week you had Penn State resurfaced in more ways than one. Okay, I'm going to give you these couple of things. Penn State comes out and says they're eventually going to pay a tribute to Joe Paterno. They don't know when, but eventually they're going to pay tribute to Paterno. I don't know what, they don't build another statue, I don't name stadium after him. I don't know. They're going to just pay tribute. You had Rodney Erickson, the president, basically going on a 3-day road trip to try to do some damage control over what transpired with the Jerry Sandusky and that whole Joe Paterno, that whole ordeal, the sex abuse case, and try to just calm the fears of alumni and bring them back into Happy Valley. You had that. Okay. Then you had a story come out that Jerry Sandusky was in the president's box in the late October on the same day that Joe Paterno got his 409th victory that made him the all-time winningest coach in college football history. So you had all that happen transpire this week, and the one common denominator of that is that Penn State still doesn't get it. Penn State Yeah, now the FBI, the investigation is still ongoing, of course. But Penn State, you know, in trying to show that they're going out their way to find out about this scandal, hired their own independent investigator who used to be a former FBI director, Louis French. And who does Louis Freech, and who does Louis Freech report to? Of course, the Penn State trustees. I mean, come on. He's supposed to be having an independent investigation. How is it independent? He's reporting to them. So they're still trying to control a situation, and which is going to make it worse because, you know, this is just going to stretch out this scandal even that much further. You know, you have alumni, even the alumni don't get it. You have alumni complaining about Joe Paterno being fired and how it went down. You have Joe Paterno's son making statements about due process. You have alumni complaining about, Bill O'Brien, the hiring of Bill O'Brien. But again, nobody's talking about finding out how these kids were sexually abused by Jerry Sandusky. You know, if Rodney Erickson wants to do damage control, okay, for the university, then make it seem like you guys, the university, is going out of its way to find out what happened. That's the best damage control that they could possibly do, by far. Instead of trying to clean up the image of Penn State. So, you know, again, sometimes they just don't get it at all. I don't understand why, after all this can happen, why they still don't get it. But it's part of the reason why this thing, took place. I mean, how Jerry Sandusky is in the press box, the president's box in October, when the officials at the school knew about the charges that were brought up against him in March, is mystifying. And then you have Penn State. You have Erickson being angered by the fact that people are trying to, that you know, he had people saying the Penn State scandal, and he wants to say it was a Jerry Sandusky scandal. I'm sorry, Jerry Sandusky worked for Penn State. He was still using facilities with on campus facilities. No, it was a Penn State problem. Jerry Sandusky was the biggest part of it. Joe Paterno. Tim Curley, those guys. It was a Penn State thing. Don't try to say, you can't separate Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky from Penn State. You kidding me? When we return, we'll have NFL picks on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. number 19 in the league with no contract is guaranteed. The big boys are out. They're putting the toys away. All these little mini wild card teams. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Goodbye, Pittsburgh. Goodbye, Cincinnati. The big dogs are out. New England. Green Bay. Baltimore. Matchup number one. New Orleans travels down to San Francisco. You know the numbers. New Orleans at home. Maybe the greatest offense ever. 41 a game. On the road, different story. Just a meager 25 a game. They go in as a 4-point favorite on the road against the 13-3 San Francisco 49ers. 49ers are looking, they're thinking themselves as Aretha Franklin. They just want some respect. We had the best defense in the league. We turn over people. We had the best turnover differential in the league. Nobody runs on us. They just want some respect. You ask yourself the question, can Alex Smith make enough plays? Can San Francisco control the clock and limit the possessions of Drew Brees and company? Again, I know New Orleans' history in the past on the road to playoffs, 0-5, including losing an embarrassing game last year to the Seattle Seahawks, who a lot of people thought shouldn't even be in the playoffs. But this New Orleans team, a little bit different. This New Orleans offense is more than just Drew Brees. They are capable of running the football. They can go out there and rush for 200 yards in any given game. They are three deep at the running back position with Ivory, Sproles, and Pierre Thomas, of course. They don't need Mark Ingram. The thing to me, there are two things. Obviously, the Saints have a quarterback advantage with Drew Brees over Alex Smith. You'll take that matchup every day of the week and three times on Sunday. The thing that the difference in this game is the fact that how poor San Francisco is in the red zone. They were one of the worst red zone teams in the league based on having to settle for field goals. That's why David Akers setting records for points. And he was all pro this year in Derby, so had a great year. But they don't score enough touchdowns when they get down there in the red zone. That will cost them in this game. I'll take the Saints 24-20. Close game, but the Saints move on to the NFC Championship. Matchup number two, prime time. Denver at New England. Last time New England is a 13.5 point favorite. Big number. Big number. Okay? A lot of pressure on New England. Okay, it's been, I understand Belichick is all-time great. Brady's all-time great. Three Super Bowl rings. New England has not won a playoff game since January of 2008, the 2007 AFC Championship against San Diego. It's a long time ago. Lost back-to-back home playoff games. Got embarrassed by Baltimore. They got defeated convincingly by the Jets. Now, keep in mind, everybody look at the final score of the last time Denver and New England met and New England played, 41-23. Oh, Denver just, New England just dominated. They did this, he did that. No. It wasn't a dominant performance. Denver was up 16-7 before, the turnover bug hit them, and New England outscored them. Next thing you know, New England outscored them 20-3 in the second quarter. And Tim Tebow, had to throw the ball and completely took Denver out of his game. Despite the fact that they were taken out of their game plan as far as the running goes, they still had 252 yards of offense. They had 167 yards rushing, 252 yards rushing, I should say. They had 167 yards rushing in the first quarter of that game. So they can clearly run on them, on New England. And the way to beat New England, again, like most big-time offenses like Green Bay, New Orleans, is keeping their quarterbacks, Brady, Breeze, and Rodgers, on the sideline. And the Denver has the match. Denver actually matches up very well with New England in terms of their offense against New England's defense. Because they can, they can keep them off the field by running the ball, chewing up clock. I think this game is much closer than what people think it will be. I like New England, but I'll take Denver with the points, and I'll say 27-20, maybe 30-20, 30-23. Unless Denver just, you know, coughs up the ball an enormous amount of times, I think this will be a game in the fourth quarter. When we return, we'll talk about the Sunday's matchups, Houston, Baltimore, Giants, Green Bay. This is Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Divisional Playoff Weekend picks 16 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Houston travels to Baltimore. Baltimore has been unbeatable at home this year. They've been just a totally different team compared to what they've done on the road. 8-0. Come in at 7-point favorites. Houston coming in with a rookie quarterback. And rookie quarterback, great win against Cincinnati to get their first franchise win as the Houston Texans. You know, a lot of people, obviously, most people love Baltimore in this game. And, you know, the defense is dominant at home. They give them around 11 points a game at home. Flacco's a different player at home. Ray Rice, they run the ball better at home. They do everything better at home. But there's just this part of me that just couldn't help leaning towards Houston in this game. This is what I like about Houston. Number one, they had the best player on the field in Arian Foster. With all due respect to Ray Rice and Ed Reed. Okay. Two, Houston's defense this year, I think, behind San Francisco, was the best defense in the NFL. We all know what Cam Cameron and Baltimore's offense can look like when they're not clicking. Not only do they struggle, it can just look like one of the worst offenses in the league, okay? You know, Houston, I know T.J. Yates is a rookie. I get it. But the thing I like about Houston is they don't care about how many yards they gain running the football. Like, they don't get, you know, if Arian Foster has 10 carries for 25 yards, they're like, okay, we're still going to get the, if the game is close, we're still going to run the football. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They don't allow the production to dictate what they're going to do as far as giving Arian Foster the ball. He's going to run the ball, or they're going to call plays for him in terms of receiving or pass catching. He's going to get the football, and that's what you love about Houston in terms of their game plan and the things they do well. Close game, extremely close game. I'm taking Houston with the upset, 16-13. At least one of these underdog teams is going to win. Forget about road versus home, because New Orleans is better than San Francisco, and they're at home, and San Francisco's at home. So forget it. Hey, San Francisco's at home, so that wouldn't be considered an upset. But history tells us that at least one of these underdog teams is going to win, and of course, one of these road teams is going to win. There was a stretch earlier this decade where you had 3 or 4 years in a row where at least one or two road teams won. So we'll see what happens with that. But I'll take Houston over Baltimore, 16-13. Game number four, Lambeau Field, Packers, Giants. Green Bay comes in as a 7.5-point favorite. That line went down earlier in the week. It was at started out at 9. A lot of people feeling good about the Giants, about the pass rush, Eli Manning, a rejuvenated running game. Giants are talking a lot of trash. Jean-Pierre Paul, we're going to win. So on and so on and so on. I hate to be the bearer of bad news if you're a Giants fan, but this year right now is 2012. No, it is not 2008. It is not January 2008. It's January 2012. I've never seen a team go 15-1 and kind of get slighted. I'm not going to say disrespected, but slighted the way the Packers have. Packers this year were the best team in football. They had the best quarterback in football. They're healthier now than they have been in a long time. They'll get Jennings back. They'll get their two tackles back. And mind you, keep in mind, that first game the Giants played the Packers this year, Giants had two sacks, okay, with backup tackles. Clifton and Bulaga will be back. You know, this Packer team has just been laying in the weeds, just waiting, biding their time, resting people, still maintaining momentum going to the playoffs. They won their last two games. Put 40 on the board, and they are the defending Super Bowl champions. I just can't see the Packers losing this game. I think the Giants will have moments. That Packers secondary is not, you know, what it was last season. Nick Collins was a huge loss. I mentioned that earlier in the season that would be a big loss. And that guy, you know, he's an All-Pro. I mean, All-Pro safeties don't, you know, fall off trees. Okay, the safety position has become, you know, almost as important as the quarterback position in this pass-happy NFL. That's all there is to it. The Joe Philbin tragedy, his son passing, obviously, you know, weighed heavily on the Packers' minds. I think they'll be galvanized and inspired by it. I don't think it will suck the energy out of the team. I like the Packers 34-24. I think there'll be some points on the game. Be very interested to see how the Giants play it. Will they try to beat the Packers in the track meet, or will they try to play the ball control by running the game more, by running the ball and, you know, taking some downs, maybe taking the ball a little bit out of Eli's hands by running the ball more, not too much, but a little bit, and keeping and trying to limit the possessions of the Packers and Aaron Rodgers by one or two. So I'll take New Orleans with the points over San Francisco. I like New England to win, but Denver with the points. 13.5 is just too big of a number for me. Houston with the outright upset of Baltimore. And finally, Green Bay will move on against the New York Giants. I'll take them and the points as well. Week number 19 picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back. 24 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call on this 14th of January, 2012. A couple of baseball notes real quick before we wrap up the program. Prince Fielder is in talks with the Texas Rangers. Hey, buyer beware. I mean, I understand there are no frontline pitchers out there, but if I'm the Rangers, I'd be very worrisome with this guy. I understand they want a first baseman, but listen, you know, you want to give him $120, $130 million? I mean, I understand he's been a productive player, but the weight certainly will concern you. You know, he would, you know, listen, he'll put up numbers in that ballpark. He has not been injury prone. I can say that, you know, for all the talks about his, you know, his weight, he's been able to stay on the field. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. The Nationals were thought to be in the running for that. Maybe that's cooled off a bit. I wouldn't advise the Nationals, you know, and forget about what happened with Jason Worth. I'm not talking about that, but I wouldn't advise the Nationals to make that move. I think the Nationals need to go in a different approach and develop their own Prince Fielder rather than going out there and try to pick up a free agents, pick up big, big high price free agents. The Nationals still have a lot of work to do in order to become a playoff team. So we'll see what happens with that. At the beginning of the program, we started out talking about what are some themes of this divisional playoff weekend. And to me, two things stuck out. Number one, the quarterbacks and the various, this group of eight quarterbacks really runs the gauntlet. I mean, you have all-time great in Tom Brady. You had Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers who will be, if they say healthy, Hall of Famers. And guys right now, those three guys are the three best quarterbacks in the league without question. You know, those guys, you know, Brees and Rodgers seeking that second Super Bowl that really will cement their legacies. Rodgers goes back-to-back. That puts him in, exclusive company with, only a handful of players. You're talking about Bart Starrs, you're talking about Elway, you're talking about Montana's. So that puts him, Terry Bradshaw did it twice. So that puts him, in basically almost immortal status. And, you got the guys who, you got Eli, who's elite but not great, who's a notch below those particular guys, but very good, very clutch. He's played great this season. You have the two guys who nobody wanted and nobody loved in Tebow and Alex Smith, but they've led their teams to the playoffs. Alex Smith still just is the best game manager, of all time, this year in terms of how he's played. And, you have... And putting T.J. Yates aside, because I don't even count him. He's a rookie quarterback who was not even a starter. Maybe he's a quarterback in the future. Who knows? But and you have a guy in Joe Flacco who needs to do something, needs to get his team to a Super Bowl. That's all there is to it. Needs to get his team to a Super Bowl if he wants to be considered an elite quarterback, if he wants to go in that direction of being an elite quarterback. Flacco did not play well this year, but that did not, stop Baltimore as – he had a very good defense, and Ray Rice is one of the best running backs in football. So all those, so this weekend covers the gauntlet of NFL quarterbacks, and I think this is a weekend that you will see the shift become almost complete from defense wins championships to offense wins championships and sales tickets as well. So I think you will see that shift almost come complete by what transpires this weekend. So, looking forward to it. Hope you out there in Radio Land enjoyed the show. Enjoy your divisional weekend football. NFL wrap-up show tomorrow night, 8:30. We'll break down all the matchups and give a sneak preview towards the conference championships next week. Enjoy Martin Luther King weekend. Go out there and do something on MLK Day. It's not just a day off. Take it easy, and I will see you tomorrow night. So long.